in the beginning when Yehuda approaches Yosef, and he says, he paraphrases what the viceroy, what Yosef had asked the brothers. Do you have a brother? Do you have a father? Yesh lechem av, oach. The Rav said, I recall an incident from my childhood. I was 7 or 8 years old in a small town in White Russia. Khaslavich was a town in Belarus. And like all Jewish boys, I attended a little cheder school. I still remember that dreary winter day in January. It was cloudy and overcast. The Torah portion of the week was Vayigash, and Hanukkah had just ended, taking away with it the joyous holiday spirit from our small town. A long, dark winter lay ahead for us cheder boys. We had to rise when it was still dark and return home holding a lantern, because nightfall was so early. That day, we cheder boys were in a depressed mood, lazy and listless. We chanted mechanically the first verses of Vayigash in a dull monotone, droning the words in Hebrew and translating them into Yiddish. One boy finished reciting Yosef's question, Hayesh lechem av, do you have a father? And the reply, Yesh lanu av zaken, yes, we have an old father, was the reply they gave to the viceroy. Then something unusual happened. Our teacher, a Chabadnik, suddenly jumped to his feet, and with a gleam in his eyes, he motioned to the reader to stop. He turned to me and addressed me with the Russian word podrabin, meaning assistant to the rabbi. The teacher asked me, what kind of question did Yosef ask his brothers? Hayesh lechemav. Do you have a father? Of course they had a father. Everybody has a father. The only person who had no father was Adam, created by Hashem. But everyone else born into this world has a father. What kind of question was that? I tried to offer the answer that Yosef simply wanted to find out whether father was still alive. Do you have a father actually means, is he alive or is he dead? If so, our teacher thundered back at me, Yosef should have phrased the question differently. Is your father still alive? It was useless to argue with our teacher. He was now no longer addressing only us little boys. He began to speak rhetorically, as if some mysterious guest had just entered that cold room. Yosef, our teacher pronounced, as if from a pulpit, he wanted to know whether his brothers were still attached to their roots and origins. Are you, Yosef was asking, rooted in your father? Do you look at him the way the branches or blossoms look on their roots? Do you see your father as the foundation of your existence? Do you see him as your provider and sustainer? Or are you just like the rootless shepherds wandering from place to place, from pasture to pasture, who forget their origin? Our teacher suddenly stopped addressing the invisible visitor, and he turned his focus directly to us. Raising his voice, he asked us, are you truly humble? Do you look down condescendingly at your old father as representing an archaic tradition? Do you think that your old father is also capable of telling you something new and exciting, something challenging, something you didn't know before? Or are you so arrogant and vain that you deny dependence on your father, upon your source? Our teacher exclaimed, Hayesh lechem ach, do you have a father? Pointing at my study mate, Yitzchak, who was considered the town's prodigy, the teacher turned to him and said, who do you think knows more? Do you know more because you are so well-versed in the Talmud? Or does your father, Yankel the blacksmith, know more even though he can barely read Hebrew? Are you proud of your father? When we recognize the supremacy of our father, then ipso facto, we accept the supremacy of our universal Father in heaven. I will never forget our teacher's novel interpretation of the Joseph story. One can use a similar approach to understanding Yosef's second question, Hayesh lechem ach. Joseph wanted to know, does your awareness of time stop at the present moment, or do you consider future generations as well? Do you plan for the world of tomorrow, enveloped in the mist of non-being? Do you have a vision? Do you believe in the improbable? The brother's answer was yes. We have an elderly father, an Av Zaken. We also have a bright, vivacious, talented young child, Yelid Zakunim Katan, our younger brother who represents the world of tomorrow. The young child challenges us to make possible the birth of future generations. Here in America, we have freedom, many privileges, and anti-Semitism poses no real threat. Remember, the Rebbe was saying this in the 70s. Yet we are committed to Eretz Yisrael. We fight for the possession of the land and continue to sacrifice young lives for each sand dune, for each rocky hill. Why? The answer is that about 3,500 years ago, our Av Zakein, Avram Avinu, he walked behind his flock on those sandy trails, and by traversing the land, he endowed it with Kedusha. Centuries later, a prophet and a king named David, he played the harp and sang the beautiful Tehillim to Hashem. The hills of our ancient homeland, which echo with ancient melodies and fiery words, are worth the sacrifice of our youth. Do our collective memory and our loyalty to the Av Zakein justify alienating the world at large? Is it logical or paradoxical? Why don't we free ourselves of the Av Zakein and adapt to the current zeitgeist? We cannot, because we are immensely concerned with our existence as a religious community. No other nation has ever cared as much about spiritual survival. The young child, he challenges us to care for tomorrow. The second piece we're going to do is the Rav's beautiful explanation of a Gemara in Sota, of a Medrash Rabbah in Bereishis Rabbah that Rashi quotes on the Sidra. When it says that Vayar es ha-hagalos asher shalach Yosef, father, he saw the agalot that Joseph sent. What's the context? Joseph reveals himself to his brothers, and he sends the brothers back to father and asks them to bring father down to Mitzrayim. And father initially refused to believe that Yosef was alive. And then it says they told father, called Divrei Yosef, the words of Joseph. And it says, Vayar es agalos asher shalach Yosef, vatechi ruach Yaakov avia. After seeing the wagons that Joseph sent, all of a sudden, father became rejuvenated. He came out of the malaise, out of the depression that had impacted him for 22 years upon Joseph's separation. So there's a number of questions that Rav asked. And he used and he explained, as did Rashi, that medrash quoted in Gemara Sota, that medrash quoted in Bereishis Rabbah, to explain everything. First of all, agalos literally means wagons. But that's not what the medrash says. So, first of all, why do you even have to mention? It's not that important a fact that the wagons were sent to bring them to Egypt, to bring the family to Egypt. Question number one. Why do you have to mention such an insignificant detail? Number two is, why doesn't Rashi translate the word, or I should say the Gemara and Sota, the Medrash, as wagons? Rashi says, no, it's referring to Egla Rufa, to the calf. What calf? The famous calf that's neck is broken. And the Rav explained, Yosef, the Ben Zakunim, you know, as Rashi quotes the Targum Unculus, the Bar Hakim, the Baal HaMasorah, father saw in Yosef not just an extremely bright young man, but a man who had leadership potential, a person who would impact his family, the world around him, and humanity. And father invested in Yosef. He taught all of his sons, but in Yosef he invested the Masorah. And the brothers, who couldn't get over the fact that this guy is bright, he's charismatic, he's dynamic, they were jealous, they were threatened by Yosef. And they felt that every time father looked at Yosef, all he could see was his dead wife, Rachel. And he couldn't be objective about Yosef. They, because of their negiah, their subjective bias, they didn't understand what father saw in Yosef, and they didn't appreciate Yosef. And after Yosef told the nevuos that we discussed in Parshas Vayeshev, of a financial destiny, of a spiritual destiny, of a different reality, you know, they were jealous. So it says Vayigar Bo Aviv in the Rishon Aliyah of Parshas Vayeshev. You know, yes, father chastised him, trying to turn down the heat, the animosity, but it says Vaviv Shamar Es HaDavar. Father Shamar Es HaDavar. He was waiting and yearning. Rashi says Mitzapeh, waiting and yearning for when those nevuot would be fulfilled. And the very last thing that father taught his son Yosef was the idea of Egla Rufa, because he knew this young man would be a leader over many. But the problem is leadership. Very often, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Dynamic, charismatic people who people worship, who people revere, that reverence very often can be taken and used as a weapon, as an egotistically driven weapon, where the leader does not serve the people, is not an eved to the people, but ends up being in control, dominates the people. And what did father teach him? The concept of Egla Rufa. That what does it mean to be a leader? When a murder takes place, who do we hold accountable? The mayor. The leadership of the community. Even though there are hundreds of witnesses that say, what are you talking about? The mayor was in Gracie Mansion. The mayor was in the mayor's office. And he was meeting with the Girl Scouts. And he was meeting with his advisors. He wasn't at the scene of the crime. We've got eyewitness testimony. But we hold him, to use our terminology, the Chachmei Ha'ir. We hold responsible. Why? They didn't provide a well-lit city to prevent crimes. They didn't invest in a police force to make sure that there would be a police force that would prevent these things from taking place. Their leadership demands of them that they provide a safe and secure environment. They didn't provide soup kitchens that people wouldn't be needy. Whether it's the victim who'd be too weak because he wasn't be strong enough, or whether it be the perpetrator who at least would need the basic necessities. None of this was provided. Who's responsible? The chachamim of the town. Because their job is not to read the ksuba, but to be the Masader Kedushin. That's not the job of being a chacham. The job is to be a servant, a slave to the people, to make sure that they're protected, that they're taken care of, that they're provided for. And that's the very last lesson he taught. That's the story of the Egla Rufa. Parshas Shoftim. We break the back of the neck of the calf that will never produce offspring, the calf that will never produce work, the calf that can't even have its meat used for benefit. That's the back of the neck as opposed to the shechita, which would be in the front of the neck. So too, that's what's happened with this victim. Because we didn't take care of a society, we didn't provide security, safety, food, necessities, this person will never produce. That's the Egla Rufa. And he taught his son Joseph what it means to be a leader. 22 years later, Joseph had been removed. And what happened? What was the message he sent back? Now, please understand this. It explicitly says in Parshas Vayigash that the Paro sent the wagons. Joseph couldn't have sent the wagons. You know why? Because what were the wagons? Only the Pharaoh had the right to sign off on those wagons. Joseph was the finance minister. He didn't control that technology. See, Egypt, Mitzrayim, they changed the whole course of warfare. We know that from the Shiras Hayam. Sus v'rochvo ramav hayam. What's the obsession, the focus on the chariot? Because until that time, all you had in warfare were bows and arrows, knives, shields. With the introduction of the wooden chariot, everything changed. It changed all of warfare. And what was the wagon? The wagon was the domestic application. It was the most top secret piece of technology they had. It was the domestic application of the whole notion of a chariot. The chariot was a military weapon. The wagon was a domestic wagon. It was an economic vehicle. I'll use an analogy. Two of the institutions that have changed our world is the World Wide Web and GPS. World Wide Web and GPS were military technology. It was American military technology. That once it became declassified and once it became transferred to the civilian economy, it just changed the way we function, the way we do business. That's what the wagon was. Only the Pharaoh could. It's like a nuclear weapon. Only the chief of the army, the commander-in-chief, can sign off on a transfer of that technology. And that's why it says in the Pusuk that that Pharaoh's the one who sent it, not Joseph. So what does it mean, Vayaris HaGalos Asher Shalach Yosef? Joseph never sent it. It says it explicitly, it was the Pharaoh, not Joseph. So that's why the Medrash, the Chachmei HaMasorah in Sota and the Medrash Rabbah said, it wasn't Joseph who sent the wagons. That was the Pharaoh. It was what? It was Joseph's message, not of the agalot, but of the eglot, of the egla rufa. And that message, okay, what was the point of that message? Father, because you have to understand, it perplexed Father. It perplexed Father. You've got a famine. You've got this empire, Mitzrayim, this North African empire. They could have taken over the whole Middle East. Everyone would have died. They could have taken over the Middle East, expanded to the Persian Gulf, conquered the civilized world. And what happens? You've got a viceroy there who prohibits hoarding, who does not allow price gauging. You know the wealth that is made under dire economic times. Think about the wealth that's been made during COVID, during the crisis of COVID, if you have the right kind of material and the right kind of technology or the right kind of assets that are needed. He didn't allow that. No hoarding. And not only that, for foreigners. He provided provisions for foreigners. Instead of wanting to take over those countries, let the people die, and Egypt will just conquer these countries. No. He provided for everyone. For all of humanity. Where do you find immorals like that? And they were, in that sense, they were so confused by this viceroy, by the moral, ethical, economic policies that saved the civilized world, that saved humanity. And when the message comes back, Father, the very last lesson you taught me 22 years ago before we were separated, you invested in me. You believed that I would have an impact on others, that I would make a difference in the world. Father, I never ever forgot that lesson that you taught me. And I used it. And I employed your teachings, your ethics and your morals to make sure that every man, woman, and child would survive this, would survive, and that they wouldn't be turned into to vassals, to be controlled and manipulated by others. When Father heard that his son not only was going to have an impact on his family, but that his son was still alive. His son was not some Gaddafi or some Erdogan, some vicious dictator. His son is the one who took his teachings and took the Masorah of ethical monotheism and saved the world, and saved humanity, and impacted the great civilization of Mitzrayim. When he heard that it was the lessons of Egla Rufa that shaped him, that still shape him to this day, then Vatechi Ruach Yaakov Aviyam. Father came back to life. He came out of the malaise, because not only is Yosef alive, but it's Yosef ben Yaakov. It's Yosef the Ben Zakunim, the Baal HaMasorah, the Baruch Hakim. And that is the ethic, the moral, that was transmitted 22 years earlier, that was alive and well and manifest in the way that Yosef conducted himself.